Thanks so much for joining us in the latest episode of Digitally Diverse, a podcast where we do a deep dive into the leaders, the movers, the shakers in the design and tech industry. And today we are so happy to say that Kavita Agarwal is joining us. Welcome, Kavita.
Thank you, Ellen. I'm pleased to be here.
Kavita, you're the design and research lead at ARC. Can you tell us a little bit about your career to date, your journey? Give us a brief overview.
Yes, sure. Thank you so much. So what I'm doing right now, I am at an interesting phase where I joined the organization that I work with as a design and research lead last year. And of late, I've just been, I'm doing a secondment with the sales team, trying to bring in design thinking into the sales aspect of how things work, right? It's an overwhelming world, but I'm trying to make it a little more design and research friendly. So it involves a lot of advocacy for research. It involves communicating the value of design and research and how we can benefit out of these design thinking practices early on before the product roadmaps are defined and designed. Your second question, how did I get here? I've had an interesting career. I've been working for about 12 years now. I started my career as a design researcher. Back then, it was not UX or product, it was design research, right? So that's how I started my career. I dabbled between design and research for a couple of years and then found my space in research. And I just fell in love with it. And, you know, when you start doing something and you really, really enjoy it, you start getting better at it and you start getting good at it. And work does not feel so much as work. So that's exactly what happened to me with this organization that I was working for in India. And after moving from a company to another, a couple of moves, I moved to Australia. And the Australian tech industry works a little differently. Especially the UX field here works slightly differently. So I'm still trying to assess. I'm still trying to be here 4 years. But I'm still trying to find my space, trying to figure out how things work here. But in the last 4 years, I've worked with organizations like Movember. I worked with them as a UX designer, which was a hybrid role of research and design. After that, I joined NAB for about a year. I was working with them as a senior designer, but a mix of design and research again. And then I found this consultancy, which saw the value of research and they wanted me to set up their research practice and lead their research practice. So yeah, that's how, in a very brief nutshell, this is how I got to where I am
great.
Today.
And you're right, I feel like design leads or anyone kind of like in design leadership kind of takes a bit of a windy route to try and figure out where they fit in and what like lights their fire. So yeah, it makes sense that you've tried out and dabbled in a little in like quite a few different things in your time. But yeah, tell me a little bit about the projects and the problems that you're trying to solve in like being placed in that secondment into the sales team at ARC.
My leaders are incredibly motivating and encouraging. So that's been really helpful. But it's overwhelming. So for example, when I was leading a capability, I've been able to develop a trust with my team members, where if you assign something, you know it'll get done. You trust them enough and you know their capabilities, so you know it'll be done. Versus when you're in the sales perspective, you managing 10,000 things. Things are moving so fast. It's just hard to catch up. You have to constantly keep chasing people. You have to constantly keep getting things done. And you have to know so many different things. So say, for example, when I was doing design and research, I knew everything in that. And I've been doing that for years and years. So of course, and like, you know, it gets to a point where it becomes second nature. It becomes muscle memory. You know it really well. And now I'm in a space, I'm in calls with developers and cloud architects and solution engineers, and they're talking hardcore technology. And I do not understand any of those. And I keep making notes and then going back and Googling and trying to figure out what were they saying. That's what my world has been for the past 1 month. But it's also been incredibly humbling to go back to them and ask them questions, go in with curiosity and making sure that you open up that avenue, you build those new rapports with these incredibly talented folks to ask them these questions and be comfortable being learning new things at a much faster pace. So it's been a lot of things. It's been a lot of moving parts, but it's been an exciting journey.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been super, super challenging to kind of be like, you know, the foundations of research and you know what your job is, but to be then put in a completely new environment and like have to figure it out as you go along. What was the reactions to like those developers or like those new connections that you were making? How did they react having someone working with them that might not necessarily know all of their lingo and all of the tech?
I'm surprisingly extremely empathetic. They were like, and not in a way, oh, come here, I'll teach you. But hey, this is what we do. And we don't expect you to know everything, but it might help if you knew these basic high level, if you had this basic high level understanding. So they've been extremely forthcoming with information. They've been extremely, incredibly helpful, surprisingly so. Like, I was not expecting this humbleness from them, honestly. So being touched, and now I don't feel foolish for not knowing those things. I understand and I accept that that's not a part of my job. I don't need to know everything. I cannot. It's humanly impossible for me to know everything. So being comfortable with that idea has been a huge learning curve for me.
That must feel very liberating as well, to be like, oh, I actually don't have to know it all. Like, this is great. I can lean on other people to help me do my job better instead of thinking that I've got to figure it all out right now. So, oh, that's good to hear. Yeah, it's super important to be able to lean on like other experts. That's great. Yeah.
And having the right people on the other side of the fence who are not making you feel incompetent for not having that information, but them translating that confidence and saying, it's okay if you don't know it. And you don't need to know it.
Yeah.
So I think that's been like the terminology that you use, liberating. That's been liberating.
Yeah, definitely. So Kavita, what kind of higher education did you take part in? And would you recommend that route for other people wanting to get into tech?
I wish I had an interesting answer for this, that, oh, I was in accounts or I was in the army and then I found design. But no, I've been a design through and throughout. So I was introduced to design very early on in my life by my brother. So my older brother, he introduced me to these universities and he told me about, you know, there are these universities that you can go to and study design. And very early on, I always knew I wanted to do something in the creative field, not something hands-on. I follow a rule of elimination. So I knew I did not want to do animation. I did not want to do anything to do with computers back then. I wanted to do something hands-on. And that's when I thought of product design. And I started preparing myself for an education in product design. I prepared for competitive exams and I got through this university. I studied fashion. So I studied fashion and lifestyle accessories back then. So I'm a graduate in design. But throughout the 4 years of my education in university, it was really interesting. The way the entire syllabus was laid out, the way the entire program of this university was laid out was they'd give you a challenge. There were no books. 4 years, no books. Computer and internet and materials that we used to work with was our world. We used to be in the lab till 10 at night working. They'd give you a problem and you go research on that problem. You identify, you study the problem, and then you have to manifest this problem solution in the form of a product. And you have to design the product, you have to build the product, you have to cut your own wood, you have to cut your own metal, weld your own things out. So that's how the entire coursework was laid back then. It's really interesting. And throughout university, I realized that I'd spend a ton of my time researching and I'd have very little time designing and actually prototyping. So I would enjoy the prototyping and I'd enjoy the research a lot more than anything else. So I really enjoyed research. How can I find a job in research? So that's what I did. I started with a small design agency and started working with them as a design researcher. But after that project, then I moved to another organization, did research and design for them. So at that point, products were hardcore, tangible products, right? They were not digital products per se. So I designed jewelry for them. So the way I function in my career, I always have the next career progression in mind. And I always look at what the roles and responsibilities. Say, for example, if I was working as junior designer, I would start with the roles and responsibilities of a senior designer in mind. I'd go through the roles and responsibilities for what's required for the next role, and I'd start functioning. So that's how I usually function. But I'll always have a vision of the future roadmap of what things could look like, what things could progress into. And I always work backwards towards that. That's how I have kind of structured my entire career, where, say, for example, when I dabbled into product, I knew what I wanted to do next. And during this journey, I figured that very quickly that the hardcore, tangible product design opportunities would end at certain point. If I wanted to move beyond, I would need to do more. I would need to add more elements into my kitty. And at that point, the entire digital transformation was happening. Even if you're designing products, you need an interface to sell those products. So at one point, I was working for a startup where we were trying to build an e-commerce website to sell these products. And the beautifully brilliant products, and we won many awards for those designs, but they're not selling. For some reason, we were not reaching these customers because the only interface between the design and the product was this website, which for some reason was not working. And at that point, I started doing a lot of usability tests and trying to identify, okay, what's wrong? How can we bring this closer to the user's mental model? And that's when I figured out that I was really enjoying it. So I moved to another design agency from there, and I picked up research with them. And I picked up an organization which had really good relationships with the larger tech companies like Facebook, Amazon, Google. So I got to work on all of these company projects for them. I was at one point handling the entire account for Facebook, did farming projects for Amazon, did incredible work with them. And that's how I entered the tech world per se. And since then, like in terms of how I've progressed, has been mostly around just switching companies and trying to identify, okay, where do I want to go next? And within design itself, when I say design, I don't just mean design. I'm talking about research. I'm talking about service design. I'm talking about UX design. I'm talking about content. So it's a mix of all of that. And I've taken up roles which has allowed me to explore all of these different kitties within research as well. There are 10,000 tools that you could use. There are so many tools that I've used once in my life and I haven't had the opportunity to use it again. So it's just that I've tried to explore as much as I can. So say, for example, social media for Facebook, ride sharing for Uber, to mental health for Movember, which was like completely different. The way they measure success was absolutely different. To banking with NAB, and now I've worked in financial services, I've worked with the transport companies here, the government organizations within Victoria. So it's just been an entire culmination of every different domain within design that I could explore, just learning from people who are in the industry and who are doing the best of what they can do, and just keeping an open mindset and being curious about things in life. That's basically how it has been for me.
Would that be like trying lots of different things and always having a goal for your next step? Would that be like perhaps some advice that you would give to younger people wanting to start out in tech and in research? Or would there be any advice that you'd give to people to not do what you did? Like, is there anything jump out for you there?
I think for me, what has really helped for me was when I was starting out in my career, identifying what my learning style was has worked beautifully. So say, for example, I'm a hands-on person. I never did my post-graduation, but I've done a couple of certifications along the way to pick up skills. But to justify the skills that I have, because there are companies who would look at these certificates that you have, who would need that tag associated, even if you have those skills, especially tech companies, they need those tags, right? But identifying that I learn better hands-on, and that's how my university education was, right? I think that's where I learned that, okay, books do not. Throughout, I was never a brilliant student. I was always an average student in school because I was learning out of books, but I thrived in college. I thrived in university. I was doing so well, but because it was all practical learning. So that's what I have done. And this is something that I encourage everyone to do internships. Learn as much as you can through internships, if that's your style. But if your style is going into a classroom, embedding and immersing yourself into a one-on-one class or, you know, being in webinars or however, whatever works for you, but constantly keep learning. Nobody knows what you want to be 10 years hence. I don't know what I want to do. I still don't know what I'm doing. I still don't know what I want to do 10 years hence. But take the next step. Don't sit there. Just take the next step and don't be scared. And this is something that I keep telling myself even now. Do not be scared. Do not be scared. And I'm constantly doing everything scared, but I still do it. So
I think it's one of those things, right, where I like, it sounds so cliche when you get out of uni. It's like, oh, the second you stop learning is the time that you should retire, because, you know, you should always be wanting to like learn a little bit more. But when you're young, you think like there's so much that you don't know, and you know that. And now that, well, for me anyway, I'm, you know, been out of uni now for 10 years, and I'm like, I now realize that not knowing all the things is a huge strength, because that connects people and it brings people together. Like me asking questions and sharing my knowledge like brings people like to me, and vice versa. So yeah, I think that's so true. Like the minute that you realize that you do need to rely on other people and their skills for you to get ahead. And yeah, I think you got to really rely on like your design community. And the learning style point that you brought up too is super interesting, because I've never really thought about that before. I think is there like a quiz or something that you do, or do you just kind of like self-assess what you're like? Yeah.
Interesting that you ask it. There are actually, I did not know about this myself. I did not know that I met this person on a hike once, and that's where they mentioned that, oh yeah, I don't like podcasts. I was like, but why? Because I like podcasts. And they were like, no, I just cannot concentrate. I just cannot focus on them. And by the time I focus, the podcast has ended. So, but they like audiobooks, and I can't listen to audiobooks. I just cannot listen to audiobooks. I like the feel of a book in my hand, and I like a cup of coffee in my hand, and I sit like, it's an experience for me. And that's how we started communicating about, and that's when we figured that, yes, there are these different learning styles and different things work for different people. It's exactly like how when I was a kid, my mom would like, you listen to a song and you remember the entire song in like 2 days. But if I want you to learn a lesson, you can't learn that. But why? But because it was much more engaging. It was in sing-song manner. It wasn't written in a book, and I did not have to read out of a book. So it's just, that's how I figured it out. And in terms of your question about, is there a scale? I did have that link where you could go in and you could assess. There are a couple of questions that you have to answer, and you could assess what your learning style is. There is, in fact,
I'm sure that there's something on BuzzFeed. They've got a quiz for everything else, so I'm sure they've got something on there. If you can do a quiz about what type of onion you are, then you can probably do a quiz about what's your learning style.
Did not go to BuzzFeed.
I guess that kind of, with that, I'd say, what kind of lights you up and like motivates you to do what you do and to like keep on stretching your comfort zone?
Very good question, and I've not been able to identify the answer to this question, but I think I just keep going. I just know that if I do not want to be stagnant. I do not want to stay where I am at for a very long time. I'm not talking in terms of jobs, in terms of relationships, in terms of people, but in terms of, I feel that there's so much to learn. There's so much to do, and I want to do everything. I'm one of those people who cannot, like, you know how social media wants you to believe that everybody has ADHD because you want to do 10,000 things. I do not have ADHD, but I still want to do 10,000 things. And I feel that I'm missing out. I'm missing out on so many different things if I don't do it right now. So what inspires me to work is just that, you know, the chance to bring in change. Design thinking is beautiful. Being empathetic towards your users and the businesses that you work with the clients that you serve, it's not hard. It's actually fun. And when you like, I genuinely am one of those boring people who enjoy what she does. So it's not really a challenge to figure out what inspires me the most. But yeah, just keeping going. And if I'm bored, I just try in do these different kind of roles and try and implement these different thinking in my working style to keep myself engaged and motivated. Mm-hmm. So I think I don't have a clear answer to what keeps me motivated. A very long-winded way of saying, I don't know the answer to that.
To me, the takeaway that I got from that would be that what motivates you is like FOMO, but with knowledge. Like you just want to like absorb all the things. And as a researcher, that's a pretty good motivation to have.
Thank you for making me sound intelligent with that and beautifully articulating it. I remember when I was growing up, my mom used to always say, oh my God, stop. You ask so many questions. Why? And then now I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. fine. Now I make a living out of asking questions. So yep, this is exactly what I was doing. So I think I've always been a curious person.
It's the perfect job for you.
I think so. I hope so.
So is there anything that you do like regularly to kind of motivate you other than, of course, like try and spice things up a little bit? Like, do you do any like self-care or just what do you do to keep yourself in like mental tip-top shape?
I am one of those lucky few who had the chance to work with a mental health organization for 2 years. So I spent 2 years with Movember and learning all about self-care and learning all about how important it is to take care of yourself, to be able to deliver the best mm-hmm. at your work. So it's a two-way street, right? So how I see it is my 9-to-5 is my job. Anytime outside of that and my weekends is my job for mm-hmm. myself.
Love that.
Where everything that I do is self-care. So be it trialing new things, experiencing new experiences, taking care of my emotional health, recognizing, identifying if I need external support. So say for example, if I'm feeling bogged down or if I'm not feeling all right about something and I can't really place a finger at it, and that happens, right? That constantly happens, and the reason could be anything. And I know, I recognize that feeling early on and I jump on a call with a counselor or I jump on my journals to write and figure out what's wrong, okay, what's mm-hmm. bothering me. And unless and until I figure out what's bothering me, I would never be able to problem solve it, right? And problem solving is what I do for a living. So if I can't problem solve my own life, then there's something intrinsically wrong there. So everything that I do in terms of, say for example, all my weekends are, I try my best not to touch my laptop unless and until there's something that's really pressing and I have not been able to manage my time in a way to address that during my work hours. So if I have to do something like the last 1 month, there were so many different things that I wanted to learn, I needed to learn. I did some of the work that spill over my weekends, but I've learned it the hard way that if I do not take care of myself and do things that makes me happy, first, recognizing what makes me happy. That was a journey. I did not know what my happiness, I did not even know what my favorite food was. But I've had a journey over the last 3 years in figuring out, okay, what makes me happy? And I keep doing that. So about 3 years back, I went on my first hike and I loved it. And I slowly started doing more of that. Simple, right? You figure out what you want to do and you keep doing more of that. That's it. That's my self-care ideology. And now I spend all my weekends out in the mountains hiking. And I've recently just picked up free climbing. And that's nerve-wracking and that's scary, but it's liberating and it's fun and it's making me really happy. So yeah, just identifying things that makes me happy and doing more of it. And also friends. I think I have a very closed circle. I have a very closed group of friends and I make like very meaningful relationships. I have a track record of making, say, one friend a year, but they're meaningful. I can have conversations with them. Even if I'm not meeting them mm-hmm. for months, they're still my friends. So I think just making sure that everything outside of work is, it's enriching my emotional being or my physical being is something, and consciously doing that is something that keeps me in check with my mm-hmm. mental health.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And when you say it like that, it's so simple. Like, find what you like and do it. that's it really at the end of the day. And yeah, I think having a really supportive circle around you is so, so important. I love that, making a new friend a year, like especially after you're out of school, like making friends is really hard as an adult. Like it's really difficult. So the fact that you're, you know, picking up new hobbies and always wanting to challenge yourself, you're inevitably going to meet people doing that as well. So yeah, that's fantastic.
It is hard, and it's so true what you said there. It's so hard making friends. And I moved here when I was 30. I knew no one. The day I landed, I hit a massive curveball in my life, which sent me like to the darkest point. I have not, like, that was the darkest phase of my life because of this personal situation. And I had no friends. My family had no clue what was going on, and I had no money. Everything was pushed. Gone the day I arrived. And but coming out of that and identifying some of these people and allowing them to be a part of your life and bringing them in, being vulnerable, it was scary, but it's liberating when you find them. It's so hard, but you've got to do what you got to do, is what somebody once told me. So this is what I keep telling myself. You got to do what you got to do. Do it again, but do it.
Do it anyway. Yeah, I think that's, yeah, spot on. And I guess when you, how long have you been in Australia for now?
I've been in Australia a little less than 4 years.
So, yeah, I mean, well, the last couple of years has been super hard for everyone, obviously, but coming to like a brand new country and not knowing anyone must have been like, yeah, that would have been a really scary moment. Has that kind of like impacted your career and your like outlook onto how you look at things?
Absolutely. So what actually happened in my personal life during this time is what took precedence, because that was so much more harder, that moving to a new country actually benefited me. Moving to a place where nobody knew me actually benefited me. So when I arrived here, my life was going to be something completely different, and then things wrecked in. But thankfully, what worked for me was having a job with Movember. I came in with a job, so that organization and my manager at the time, they literally pulled me out of the darkest. Nobody knew what was going on. I had not opened up to anyone about what was going on in my personal life. But he could see the impact. So he'd interviewed me, right? When I was in India, he'd interviewed a different person and ended up joining the organization was this shy, underconfident, who did not know what to say, when to say, because she was constantly at PTSD. Mm-hmm. And I was constantly, my brain was fogged with whatever was going on at home. It was just so hard for me to concentrate at work. It was just so hard for me to function at work. But I was also hanging on to the job because that was the only point of anchor I had. So from a very confident, independent person to this shy, timid, underconfident person who started working, it had a massive impact on my job because my job is all about people. My job requires me to present my findings back to senior management. My job requires me to convince people that what I'm saying is right. But if I'm not confident about it, I would never be able to translate that energy. And that is exactly what was happening. But identifying that that was happening and making sure that I'm taking the right steps to not sit in the problem, but figuring out how to solve this problem. Because curveball will come, right? Like life will go on. And problems will come to all of us. I wish there was a way. I wish I could just stand here and say, statue, don't come to me. Or stop, don't touch me. But that's not going to happen. These things will continue to happen. But what I learned through Movember was, I need to work on my resilience. I need to control what I can control. And what I can control is my resilience. And nobody knows that. I did not even know what resilience means as a terminology when I was in India. Mental health is a taboo there. And I land here in deep into it, figure out that, okay, because of the situation, I have now PTSD. How do I deal with that? And I, with this job and my manager at the time, the most supportive, most incredible, most talented person that I've ever worked with. You know, when you have those performance check-ins and then you have KRAs for the next couple of months, my KRAs for the next couple of months was exercising, making sure I'm talking to a counselor, making sure I'm looking after myself, and making sure I'm eating right. These were my KRAs. That's what he did for me.
Good leader, isn't it?
He is the best. And he's not just a kind person. He is incredibly talented and intelligent. Like, I owe so much to him. He's called Adam Metruglio, and he is the best. So that's what he did for me. And that's when I realized that, you know what? He's right. If I don't take care of myself, I lose everything in my life, because everything is connected with me and I'm connected with my emotional state of being. Just prioritizing that and identifying what works for me, because through my journey in mental health, I learned that there are 10,000 tools, there are 10,000 methodologies, but not everything would work for me. Exactly like how we were talking about learning styles, right? There are 10 different ways of learning, but not necessarily everything would work for me. So identifying what works for me in terms of this kit of tools, this toolkit, identifying which one works for me and making sure I practice that more and more to build my resilience, and having the same problem solving attitude in my personal life is what helped. It is what pulled me out of wherever I was. And now I see myself getting back to the person. I'm still not 100% there. I'm still not what I was. I'm still healing. I'm still recovering. But I see that I'm so much more closer to what I was in terms of my confidence, in terms of how I conducted myself at work now than I was at the time when I, trust me, I would be in a meeting and you wouldn't even know I was that bad.
You wouldn't have thought that after, how eloquently you're speaking today. So yeah, that's incredible and you're right. Like, you really do have to prioritize yourself sometimes, and it's like, you as a person, you are the foundation. Like, and what you do, who you are with your friends and your family and your work, that's all an extension of that. So if you're not taking care of yourself and you realize that there's problems that need to be solved, then yeah, the second that you can realize that and recognize that and work on it, the better, like, for every other aspect of your life. So kudos to you for recognizing it, and kudos to your Movember manager for also being a really powerful leader in that moment, because I feel like that's a good leader, right? They can see that, you know, if the foundation isn't there, you've got to work on that first.
100%, right? Like, I was in a 6-month contract for them. It was very easy for them to, like, for him to just decide that, you know what, it's not working out, your contract is coming to an end, and we'll not renew it. But he took a chance and he did, like, yeah, that's a leader. That's, I don't have a terminology for him, but he's incredible. That's a person who walks the talk of empathy.
Yeah, love that. Thanks for sharing. I really appreciate you sharing that with us. So Kavita, we've kind of touched on, you know, your journey so far and how that's been impacted with, like, you moving and, like, some really incredible leaders. So if you could give yourself or your younger self some career advice, what would that be like?
What would I tell the younger self? I think where I'm right now, in terms of the headspace that I'm in right now, I just say, don't be scared. I wish I knew and I learned how to not be scared early on in life. That's something that I'd say, that everything will work out if it has to work out, or it's never too late. And, like, I mean, yes, career is important. Find what you really enjoy doing, but it's also okay if you don't. Just don't be scared. I think that's why I wish I knew that earlier.
I think that's so true. Like, you go into work and career, and all of a sudden you're, like, thrust into this world that you don't know anything about, and it's super scary. Like, it is. It's brand new. You're learning how, like, a workplace functions, and it's super daunting. But knowing that, you know, you do get used to it, you do get the hang of it, and there's always going to be people who are around to help if you ask for it. Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, and they're going to be all kinds of people. You choose what you want to be and just stick to that. I know I've had situations where I've tried to fit in and I've tried to, you know, blend in, But you can't blend in. If you can't blend in, it's Hell all yeah. right. Just hold, lean on to who you are as mm-hmm. a human being and roll with it and just constantly learn and make sure you're not hurting people and you're not doing anything that you mm-hmm. lose people.
Yeah, yeah. Make sure, just follow your gut. Huge, huge part of, yeah, figuring out what yeah. Direction to take. And is there any, like, any media or any podcasts or books or anything that you like to read that kind of keeps you motivated and keeps you, like, in tune with your craft?
I'm going to be controversial here. I do not listen to any design podcasts. I do not read design books. I do not read design. Like, I do refer to them. Like, I keep going back to a lot of recordings from Jared School. But in terms, I do refer when I'm at work and if I need information or if I'm looking for inspiration or if I'm trying to assess how have different people in the industry solved these problems, then yes. But outside of work, I feel, like I was telling you earlier, right, that there's so much that I feel that I'm missing out on. I'm spending a big chunk of my time in my craft. I'm spending a lot of my time doing what I do and learning while I'm doing that. Every client that I'm serving right now is a new problem. Every person that I'm talking to is a new stakeholder that I'm speaking with. So I have to constantly adjust and shift my methods of communication, my methods of delivery to adjust to how they receive information, right? So outside of work, I try and take in as much as I can from different parts of the world or different parts of different domains and academics, be it academics, be it. I think yesterday I was listening to a podcast about scams, not for work. I'm not doing anything related to banking at the moment or security at the moment, but just learning how scammers work and how their brain functions and how do they approach? They're creative, man. They are so creative in terms of their approaches. So not learning how to scam, but just learning how do they function, mm-hmm. how they function. I was listening to this podcast where this guy was talking about selling drugs in the gray market. Oh my God, the amount of vigilance he shared, the amount of the process orientation brain that he had, that was interesting to learn from that. And just figuring out that, yes, there are everybody, what we're all doing is trying to do a task from mm-hmm. A to B, right? That's what everybody is doing, regardless of you trying to build an army or trying to build an application or trying to build a bridge. But that's what we're all primarily trying to do. So just learning from or just being open to ideas from all these different domains and learning from them is something that I do. Mm-hmm. I have recently been listening a lot to Jay Shetty on yep. Purpose. And I've just been enjoying all the different kinds of people who come in and all the different stories that they speak mm-hmm. about and just trying to take one lesson from them, whichever resonates with me, and trying to imbibe that mm-hmm. in my life in one way or the other, or trying to practice and figure out how I feel about it. So that's usually how I go about listening to things. And I don't listen to a lot of podcasts or audiobooks, do not work for me, but I go to the gym, and that's when I have an hour of having something. Instead of listening to music, if I don't feel like it, then that's when I'm listening mm-hmm. to these things. So
that's great. I totally agree. I love listening to really general podcasts too, like, you know, something design specific here and there, but I like kind of similar to what you're saying as well. I kind of want to separate my 9-to-5 to the media that I'm consuming outside of work, and if I can learn things from like those Jay Shetty podcasts and, you know, true crime podcasts and all that fun stuff, then, you know, you can apply those learnings into your everyday life as well. So there's definitely a time and a place for some of those guilty pleasure podcasts for sure.
It is, right? And the amount, like, and that's such a good medium to learn as well outside of work. So say, for example, I've been trying to understand the property mm-hmm. market here. I don't know many people here. I don't have yeah. family here. How do I learn about it? These are such great mediums to just, mm-hmm. when you constantly keep hearing about it, I know it's really hard for you to intake everything that is being said in an hour-long interview or a 30-minute interview or a podcast, but something mm-hmm. would resonate. That if even if I can get one single takeaway from a 30-minute podcast that is actionable for me,
yeah,
that's it. Yeah. I've learned something new.
Yeah, a really great way to look at it. Love that. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Kavita. I have learnt so much from our chat. Thank you for your transparency, and hopefully we've all learned something from this podcast. I'd love to hear anyone's one takeaway. So thank you again. And is there anything that you'd like to add to the end of the episode?
Thank you. I really enjoyed this. Honestly, this felt like a conversation with a friend than you leading the chat or anything like that. So thank you for making it beautiful and inviting me over.
You're so welcome. Thanks, Kavita. All right.
Thank you. Bye.